to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levone. You're coming up in this hour, drama. Later on, it's the Hollywood Theater of Stars from 1952, but right now, the Radio City Playhouse, featuring the John Galsworthy story, The First and the Last, in their 15th episode for NBC from November 15th, 1948.
The National Broadcasting Company presents Radio City Playhouse, Attraction 15. Ladies and gentlemen, here is your director and your host on Radio City Playhouse, Harry W. Junkin.
Thank you, Bob Warren, and good evening, everybody. First of all, on behalf of everyone connected with the show, may we thank you very much for your wonderful letters praising last week's broadcast and welcoming us back to the air. Actually, we received only one complaint from a lady whom we'll call Mrs. X. She wrote, "Why must you portray such horrible people? I don't mind listening to Radio City Playhouse, but I'd sure hate to live with anybody who has a mind like yours." Well, Mrs. X, thanks for your letter anyway, and please don't think that you're not going to meet some entirely lovable, kind, good characters on Radio City Playhouse. You are. And in the very near future, so I hope you'll stick with us. Unfortunately, nasty people make good stories. So good, in fact, that we've another one for you tonight, this time by Mr. John Galsworthy. John Stanley plays Keith Darrant. Ian Martin plays Larry Darrant, his brother, in John Galsworthy's The First and the Last, Attraction 15 on Radio City Playhouse.
O'clock of a November evening in London in the year 1914. The fire in Keith Darrant's study flicks little dapples of light across the turkey red carpet. Mr. Darrant is dozing, but even in sleep, his face is strong, cold, clear cut. Mr. Keith Darrant, K.C. Holly, his butler, tiptoes into the room, stands looking at his master's virile, calm face, then coughs discreetly.
Yes, Holly, what is it?
It's your brother, sir.
Here?
Yes, sir.
Is he sober?
He seems so, sir.
All right, show him in.
Yes, sir.
Oh, and Holly, you'd better telephone Judge Tillerson and say I may be a few minutes late for dinner.
Yes. Come in, Mr. Larry.
Thank you, Holly.
Come in, Larry, come in.
Hello, Keith.
Come over here where I can see you. Sit down. You look dreadful. Have you been drinking? Don't mumble, Larry. If you have anything to say, say it. I suppose you want money. What is it?
I've killed a man.
You have been drinking.
No, that's true.
Larry, I have a dinner appointment. Whatever you've got to say, say it.
So I tell you. I killed a man.
Larry,
last night.
You're not serious.
Yes, I'm serious. What do you want me to do? I've told you, you're my brother. Can't you understand English?
How? When? Tell me.
But there's a girl, you see. She's foolish. She married a man named Wallen. He left her with a baby coming. Ran out on her. She lost the baby and almost starved to death. Then I came along. She's not what you'd call respectable.
Go on.
But Keith, I've never met a sweeter woman. She's fine and good and Oh, she's so young. She's only 20. Well, last night when I went to her, Warren was there. He turned up again. We had a row. He was drunk and half mad with rage. He came for me and I hit him. I took him by the throat. Well, when I let go, he was dead.
Larry.
I never even knew till it was over that she'd been hanging on to him, too.
Then what did you do?
We sat by a long time.
And then?
I carried it down the street to an archway.
Did anyone see?
No.
What time was this?
3 in the morning.
Where was the archway?
Corner of Love Lane.
Then what?
I went back to her.
Where does she live?
42 Borough Square, Soho.
You idiot, don't you realize what this means? You know that I'm within an ace of a judgeship.
Help me, Keith.
What do you expect me to do, rush out and defend you? For years I've worked and slaved to get where I am. And you smash everything with a fit of insane, mad temper.
Keith, help me. I may be no good, but I've never even heard a sigh if I could help it.
That's a lie like fury.
I'm so afraid I feel sick.
Well, pull yourself together. Let me think. You're sure no one saw you?
Yes.
When you left the girl finally, where did you go?
To my room.
Fitzroy Street?
Yes.
What have you done since?
Sat there, thinking.
Can a girl be trusted?
She loves me.
Can a woman like that love?
Oh, you lawyer. Sometimes I want to...
Answer me.
All right. I tell you she's devoted to me. Keith, did you ever pick up a lost dog? Well, that's what it's like. She has a lost dog's love for me and I for her. She's been the only decent thing in my life.
You can spare me the intimate details. Did you take anything from the body?
Oh, yes. This envelope dropped out of the struggling.
Give it to me. Mr. Patrick Wallen, Simon's Hotel, Farrier Street, London. There. Into the fire.
Doesn't that make you an accessory to the crime or something? Burning it, I mean?
I'm quite aware of the risk I'm running. Now tell me, this Wallen, was this his first reappearance after an absence?
Yes.
And you say you didn't mean to kill him?
No, of course I didn't. He hit me and I... Oh, Keith, I didn't know I was so strong.
Did you look to see if his clothes were marked?
No.
Why not?
I'm not made of iron like you.
How long has the girl been at this Soho place?
About a year.
Are either she or Wallen known to the police?
Not that I know of.
And you're sure no one saw you either entering or leaving her place last night?
Yes, I'm positive. I keys to her flat.
Give them to me. What else have you that connects you with her?
Nothing.
Photographs, letters.
No. Nothing.
Now listen, Larry. Go straight home and stay there until I get in touch with you.
All right.
Have you any money?
Little.
I'll get you some tomorrow.
You're very good to me, Keith.
Don't mention it. The privilege of a brother. As it happens, I'm thinking of myself. You realize you've dragged me into the most unholy mess. Me, King's Counsel, sworn to the service of the law.
I know, Keith. I know it. Don't you think I know it? I'd like to jump in the Thames or something.
Oh, stop being melodramatic. Go home and keep your head. Stay there until you hear from me. Hawley. Now remember, keep your head.
All right. Good night.
You wanted me, Mr. Darren?
Yes. Good night, Larry.
Good night, Keith. Oh, my boy.
Good night, Mr. Larry.
Has he gone?
Yes, sir.
Now listen, Hawley. Larry's in trouble. You'll find out about it soon enough. Follow him. Make sure he goes straight home. He's overwrought, and if he starts drinking, anything can happen. Follow him. Don't let him do anything but go straight home. Understand?
Yes, sir.
As soon as we finish dinner, I'll phone you from Judge Tillerson's.
Very good, sir.
You better get after Larry quickly. I'll phone you later.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Mr. Darren's residence.
Polly, did he go straight home?
Oh, yes, Mr. Darren.
You're sure?
He went into a chemist's shop. I didn't think it wise to stop him.
Chemist's shop?
Yes, sir. I couldn't see what he bought. I didn't go in after him. I waited outside and looked through the window. He bought something in a little blue box.
Polly, I'm going down to Borough Square. It's in Soho. I'm leaving Judge Tillerson's now. Wait up for me.
Yes, Mr. Darren.
Startled me, Constable. The fog so thick I didn't see you. Is this Glove Lane?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
I beg pardon, Governor. I shouldn't be around here too much, sir. If I was you, bad district.
Thank you, Constable.
Only last night a bloke was found here done in, right by this arch.
Yes, I read about it in the papers.
Yes, some room characters round these parts.
Yes. I'm looking for Borough Square.
Straight ahead, sir, and turn to the right.
Thank you, Constable. Be frightened. I had a dinner engagement or I wouldn't have come so late. Larry's told me everything. It's an awful business.
Yes, awful.
In this room?
Yes. Just where you are standing.
You look very young to be a... How old are you?
I'm 20.
Are you fond of Larry?
I would die for him.
I'm going to try to help.
Oh, yes, help us. Please help us.
This man, Wallen, your husband, before he came here last night, how long since you saw him?
18 months.
I was out to dinner with friends who are very close to the courts. They've identified Wallen's body. They'll start looking for everybody connected with him.
He never let people know I was married to him. I don't know if I really was. We went to an office and signed our names. But I did not understand English very well then. I don't know if we really were married.
Well, we can hope not.
He treated many like me, I think.
You're sure no one around here knows of your connection with him?
I'm sure.
If the worst comes to the worst and this man is traced to you, can you trust yourself not to give Larry away?
I've burned all the things he has given me, even his picture.
Good. Since last night, what have you been doing?
Crying. I'm so afraid.
You haven't been out?
No.
You're a strange girl. What do you call yourself now? What's your name?
Vanda Levinska.
One more question. Do the police know you because of your life?
No. No, the police do not know me.
Good. Well, I'm going now. Don't do anything until you hear from me. Talk to nobody. Don't go out for anything except to buy food. Keep quiet. And don't worry.
Not worry? How can I not worry?
Well, you can try.
Please, sir, do not take Larry away from me. I will be so careful. But if he left me, I should die. Please, please, sir, be good to us, to Larry and me.
What is Keith doing, Wanda? We've heard nothing for 5 days. He's usually so prompt. I couldn't stay locked up in my rooms forever. I had to come out tonight. I had to see you. Been nothing in the papers, nothing from Keith. I can't stand this much longer.
I've prayed to the Virgin. Larry, she will help us.
You don't really believe that, do
you? Oh, yes. Oh, yes, Larry, I do.
I wish I could. Wish I could believe in anything. Oh, I hate this world. Hate its savageness, its ugliness. I hate Keith's world, all righteousness and smugness and success. We don't belong anywhere, Wanda. We're no good, you and I. We're weak, we're soft.
Better dead than alive.
No, no, Larry. Please don't be so unhappy. I can't bear to see you so hopeless in the heart. Something will...
Be quiet.
He's your brother.
No. I gave him the keys. I don't know. It might as well go.
Keith! Larry, I told you to stay at home. I went to your rooms, you weren't there. I might have known you wouldn't have the strength to stay away from here.
I couldn't help it, Keith. I couldn't stay alone any longer. I had to see her.
Well, you're lucky. They've made an arrest.
They've what?
I've just come from the courts. It'll be in the papers tonight. They've arrested a man named Anderson, a little yellow, ragged scarecrow. He's lame and half-starved. They were fools to think he'd have had the strength.
Arrested? But how, Keith? How?
There's not nearly enough evidence to convict him. It'll give us a breather. He apparently robbed the body.
Yes, but don't
he pawned a snake-shaped ring, and they identified this Wallen by it. He's in no danger. They always get the wrong man first. It'll do him no harm to be locked up for a spell. In the meantime, you've got to get out of England.
No, but I can't.
Be quiet, both of you. There's a boat from the Argentine tomorrow. I'll get you a ticket, Larry, and some money.
Both of us?
You can't go together. She can go on the next boat.
No, Keith.
What do you mean, no?
I can't go, that's what I mean. Not while there's a possibility of this man being charged with murder.
Good grief, Larry, don't be an idiot. I'm a lawyer. I know there's not nearly enough evidence. No jury would convict, and if they did, no judge would hang. Besides, a ghoul who can rob a dead body ought to be in prison.
No, Keith. I've got to see it through.
Yes, Larry, you must.
I've had about enough of you, Larry. Can you possibly imagine what I've been through in the last 5 days? My own brother, Lawrence Darrant, a murderer. Do you know what this will do to me? It'll be the end of everything. Everything I've worked for 20 years I've slaved and studied and worked. And I'm not going to see the whole thing smashed up because you're a weak, worthless sham of a man that hasn't enough backbone to... I won't let you. You understand? I won't let you. Well?
I don't want the money, Keith. Or the ticket. You better go.
Now look here, Larry. You're in no position to argue. You're in grave danger of ending up on the gallows. Get on that boat tomorrow, and I promise you she'll join you within a month.
No.
It'll be at least 5 months until he comes up for trial. You can't possibly live like this for 5 months, slinking around street corners at night. You can't stand it, neither can I.
I can stand it.
I'm not going to stay here and argue, Larry. This is your last chance.
You'd better go, Keith.
Can't you do something with him?
But he's right, sir. This poor little man, Anderson. Yes, Larry, you have to see it through.
Very well. There's nothing more to be said. I wash my hands of the whole affair. Good night.
You're right, Larry. You are right. Do not be afraid, my dear.
That poor little lame scarecrow. Locked up because of me. Locked up like an animal in a cage. Wondering how. Wondering how this could happen to him.
Larry, you're not going to give yourself up.
I don't know.
I cannot live if you are not with me, Larry.
Yes, yes, you can.
No, I'm not like you Englishmen. I'm different.
Oh, what, of course. Of course you are.
I do not care for fine clothes, for excitement. I do not care for much money. I care for you. I've been hungry before. I can be hungry again. But I cannot live without you, Larry.
Oh, Wanda, Wanda, I love you. If I only had the courage to do what I ought to do. If I only had the courage.
Mr. Mr. Darren, sir?
Yes, Holly.
They're going to hang Anderson, sir. They found him guilty of Wallen's murder. They're going to hang him, sir.
When did you learn this?
Just now, sir. It's in the paper this morning. Didn't you know, sir?
No, I've been so busy, I didn't know.
Oh, it's a sad business, sir.
Larry wouldn't be fool enough to go and confess, to go and blab to the police. Holly, get your coat on quickly.
Yes.
We've got to get to Larry before he makes a fool of himself. Larry, it's I, Keith.
If they're not here, sir, where would they be?
I don't know. Here, open the door.
Keys, sir?
Yes, Larry gave them to me months ago. Go on, open the door.
Oh, merciful heavens, Mr. Dallant. Look!
Keep quiet, you idiot. Keep quiet and shut the door.
They're dead, sir. That's what he bought in the chemist's shop. Look, here's the little blue box.
Of all the ridiculous, insane things to do, how could they do this to me? Don't touch them, Holly, don't touch them.
Here's a note, sir.
Let me see it. I, Lawrence Darrant, about to die by my own hand, confess that I deliberately and with premeditation strangled and killed a man known as Patrick Wallen on the night of... Holly, quickly. We've got to get out of here.
But,
stand there staring at the man. They're dead, both of them. Too weak and stupid to live.
Oh, Mr.
Come along. We've got to get out of here. And we've never been here, do you understand? We've never been here.
Mr. Darren, sir.
Well, Holly, what is it?
I'm sorry to mention it again, sir, but time's getting short. I know that...
Holly, stop it. I'm sick of your tawdry emotionalism day after day, week after week.
But, sir, I thought that you...
You thought. What do you think I've been doing? Night after night, sitting here, I look into the flames, and I see a street filled with people all staring at me. Brother of well-known KC, guilty of Wallen murder. What am I supposed to do? Weaken and go to the police? You want to let me lose that flood of foulness?
But, sir, Christmas is over. It's New Year's Day tomorrow. You've so little time, sir. They're hanging Anderson on January the 14th.
Don't you think I know that? Stop it, Holly, stop it.
Oh, Mr. Darren, sir, please.
Leave it with me, Holly, leave it with me. Don't talk about it anymore. Leave it with me.
Oh, thank you, sir, thank you. I knew you couldn't be your father's son and not do something.
Please, Holly, let me alone now.
Good morning, Mr. Darrant.
What are you doing up so early?
This is the day, sir. This is the day.
I know it's the day. They're hanging him at 5 o'clock this morning and you can't sleep.
Mr. Darrant, you've got to telephone the prison. You've still got Mr. Larry's letter, haven't you?
Yes. Yes, I have. It's here on my desk. There's nothing left out. It's very clear. Even to the addresses of people who could identify the girl as having once been Wallen's wife.
You haven't much more time, sir. I called the prison last night just to see how long it would take. They've a telephone right beside the gallows, just for last-minute things like this. Oh, let me get them for you, Mr. Darren.
Holly, put that phone down. Put it down, I say. Holly, I've decided not to smirch the reputation of my dead brother or my dead mother. Not because of some little sewer rat that isn't worth saving, that's better off dead anyway. Larry's suicide with that woman was bad enough as it was. It involved me in no way, except as a mourner. But now, if I let this confession reach the authorities, I could never escape the gravest suspicion that I had known of the whole affair for the past 3 months. I'd have to go into court. I'd be recognized by that policeman. Who would believe in the mere coincidence of such a visit on the part of the murderer's brother?
But, sir, you can't let an innocent man...
Be quiet, Holly. Nothing could prevent this thing from ringing to the housetops.
Let him hang. Yes, I can say it. Let him hang. I will not, by my own action, topple myself into the gutter.
Oh, please, Mr. Depp, don't do that. Don't. Oh,
you see how quickly it burns, Hawley? Poor Larry's confession. Poor, stupid, silly Larry. He died for nothing. He had no will, no purpose. He and that girl might now have been at the other side of the world, but no. They have to take poison. Fools. Weaklings. A little conscience, a little remorse. What's that compared to living? A man must walk firmly, Hawley. Hold to his purpose. He must go on. And up.
You shouldn't have burned that confession, Mr. Darren.
Don't be impudent, Hawley. You know, of course, that if you went to the police now, you'd sound like a fool. You haven't a shred of evidence. Not a shred. And I'd be forced to bring up all sorts of countercharges. How surly you are, how you dislike me, how you've stolen on several occasions that I'd overlooked. Oh, no, Hawley. You'll keep quiet.
Quiet? Perhaps I shall. Because they wouldn't believe me. But I won't be staying on here, Mr. Darren.
You'll stay until the end of the month, if you expect to be paid.
No, Mr. Darrant. I'm leaving. By destroying Mr. Larry's confession, you've become a murderer. You've murdered a man. I won't work for a murderer.
Five o'clock.
Oh, Mr. Darrant. Oh, Mr. Darrant, sir. Don't you realize that you're guilty, too? Don't you realize that, sir?
It's over.
It's over. And you're a murderer. A murderer.
I? Murderer? He's right. That's what I am. A murderer. Murderer.
Just heard The First and the Last by John Galsworthy. The production was directed by Harry W. Junkin and starred John Stanley as Keith, Ian Martin as Larry.
The Radio City Playhouse on Tuned to Yesterday from November 15, 1948 on NBC. John Galsworthy's story, The First and the Last, adapted by Nelson Olmsted, a master storyteller in his own right, known to radio listeners the country over. Reading tales on the world's greatest short stories on the NBC Blue Network in the early 1940s to his scary series Sleep No More in the mid-1950s, among acting duties on the sci-fi series X-1. You're listening to An Hour of Drama on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now transcriptionist C.P. McGregor hosts the La Rosa Hollywood Theater of Stars in the syndicated episode from 1952 featuring the story The Good Old Days.
And now the curtain rises on Act One of The Good Old Days, starring Robert Mitchum.
Come on, take a chance. Steve Brody did. Ever since Steve Brody's famous leap from Brooklyn Bridge, those words have been the alibi for two generations of reckless schemes. But why did Steve do it? Well, it started one night at Mulligan's Bar, where Daisy, his girlfriend, was singing. Steve had bought an engagement ring to give to Daisy. Not a very big one, but he'd been saving for months. It was just like a big kiss.
Hey, Mulligan!
Hello, Steve. What brings you over to Mulligan's?
I got something to talk to you about. Come on, let's get away from this noise.
Oh, sure, sure. We can talk in the back room. Come on. In here, Steve.
All right, Daisy. Daisy, you look great. You got a new dress, huh?
Mm-hmm. You like it?
Oh, I sure do. It's almost as blue as your eyes.
Oh, the same old Steve. The same old Blarney.
Say, look, Daisy, I bought something.
Oh, you did? Oh, Steve. Steve, you should have seen the party John L. Sullivan had here last night. Why, a crowd of uptown swells were here and
John L., that big hunk of beefsteak brings Mulligan all his business. Well, what I wanted to say was...
I wanted to tell you about it. I bet I sang after the ball 10 times. And Steve, take a look at this ring.
Daisy, is that a real rock, a real diamond?
Well, it sure is. Diamond Jim Brady gave it to me for a tip.
Oh, he did. And Mr. Brady's sure free with his sparklers.
Well, what are you getting sore about?
Nothing, only that rock could make another guy's ring look sick.
Oh, Steve, did you buy me a ring?
Whatever give you that idea. I ain't no good time, Charlie.
Oh, well, what'd you want to tell me?
Nothing at all. Oh, John L. Sullivan's here again.
Well, sure, he's always here.
Mulligan, I can lick any man in the world.
Yeah, he makes me sick, that big windbag.
You wouldn't dare call him that to his face.
Who wouldn't? I ain't afraid of that big bum.
Hey, Steve, come back here.
Oh, John L. Oh, so you let him have it, eh?
Yes, Sir Mulligan. It was in the 6th round. Bare knuckle fight, of course.
Sure.
I says to my opponent, I says, you've gone far enough. So I uncorks her, right? And... Well, hello, Brody.
Hello, John L. The big hunk of beefsteak himself.
Well, if it isn't my friendly competitor, can I treat you to a drink?
No, thanks, Mulligan. I do my drinking in my own joint. I know what I'm getting there.
No, that's no way to talk, Brody. I'm sure Mr. Mulligan is nothing against a small businessman like yourself.
A small businessman? Listen, Sullivan, someday Steve Brody's saloon is going to be the place on the bottom.
Steve, please don't start anything.
Yeah, you go ahead and laugh, but I won't need any big windbags hanging around to put my joint over.
Steve.
And who would you be referring to as a windbag?
Well, now I could be referring to you, Mr. Sullivan.
Oh, yes?
But I ain't.
Well, it's lucky you ain't, because John L. can tear you apart with his bare hands.
Right, Mulligan. I can lick any man in the world.
Yeah, I know. I read it in the police gazette. Listen, Sullivan, going around knocking guys down with your fists don't get you no place. Not if you want to be a big guy.
John L.'s the biggest guy in this town. 210 pounds of bone and muscle.
I mean big like President Garfield. You think he went around knocking guys down to get in the White House? He used his brain. That's what I'm going to do.
Oh, you're going to use your brain, are you? You're going to be president. Oh, Brody for president.
Vote for Brody. Brody for president.
So, you're going to be a big guy, eh?
Uh-huh. I'll have bigger diamonds than Jim Brady. I'll have more stocks than Charlie Schwab. And I'll have more furs and real estate and houses and horses than Mr. Astor. All right, get this, Sullivan. One of these days, I'm going to make joints like Mulligan's look sick.
Well, I wish you luck, Steve. I expect to see your business thriving when I get back.
Well, where are you going, Sullivan?
Me? I'm going to San Francisco, California, to knock out Paddy Ryan. Ain't you heard about the fight?
Yeah, I heard about the fight, but I ain't heard how you're going to knock out Paddy Ryan.
Brody, if I didn't know you had the wild imagination of a crazy Irishman... I'd knock you out.
Oh, please, don't pay any attention to Steve, Mr. Sullivan.
I should say not. Good night. Good night, Daisy.
Why,
everybody knows John L.'s going to win. Mr. Richard K. Fox of the Police Gazette is even installing a ticker tape right in here the night of the fight.
A ticker tape? What for?
So my customers can get the fight results right from the ringside in San Francisco.
Well, you're going to look awful sad, Mulligan, when you read the results to your customers.
You want to make any bets on that, Brody?
Sure. I got a pocket full of Paddy Ryan dough, and it says John L. is going to get knocked out.
I'll take your dough, Brody. I'd like some of that myself.
Oh, Steve. Steve, please wait a minute. What'll you do if John L. wins?
Don't worry, Daisy. I'll take a chance.
Hey, Mulligan. What does the ticker say about the fight? Come on, read it to us. Hurry up.
Yeah, how's it coming?
Tell us where he hit him. Did he hit him in the jaw?
Yeah, come on, read it. Hurry.
Buy it, everybody, if you want to hear the big fight. The results of the John L. Sullivan-Paddy Ryan fight are coming in on the ticker. Oh, ladies and gentlemen, I am pleased to announce that John L. Sullivan just knocked out Paddy Ryan in the second.
Hey!
cabin there. Let me at the bar there.
Give me another beer, eh?
$50 ever picked.
Eh, shut up, Logan.
Oh, what a sucker. Here comes your bartender, Brody. Well, what do you think of your boss now, Nobby?
Steve, I told you not to bet all that money.
Listen, Nobby, one crack out of you, and so help me, I'll let you have it.
I don't get sore, Steve. You know I'm your pal, but what are you going to do?
Nobby, I don't know. That big bum, Patty Ryan. Nobby, I got to get $100, and right away, too.
You got as much chance of getting $100 around here as jumping off the Brooklyn Bridge.
Oh, I don't know. There must be some way we... Hey, wait a minute. Say that again.
What? Steve, say what again?
About the Brooklyn Bridge.
Oh, look, it ain't that bad. You ain't going to commit suicide.
Listen, Nobby, I'm the best diver in the world. I can even dive off the Brooklyn Bridge.
Who's going to dive off the Brooklyn Bridge?
I am, Mr. Mulligan.
Oh, you are? Oh, ladies and gentlemen, I wish to announce that our good friend Steve Brody is going to jump off the Brooklyn Bridge.
And furthermore, I'm taking any and all bets.
Oh, Steve, I hope you know what you're doing.
You heard me, Daisy. I'm going to jump off the Brooklyn Bridge.
Steve, just look at that bridge. Look how high it is.
All right, Nobby. So it's high. You'd think I was going to get killed or something.
And there's worse things than being killed. You could be permanently injured.
Look at that crowd up there, Nobby. I can't back out now. Listen, all you got to worry about is keeping that rowboat close by so you can pick me up out of the water.
Okay, Steve, I'll be waiting for you. Don't worry. So long.
Mr. Shaughnessy, I say that Steve Brody will never have the nerve to jump off this bridge.
You got a bet, Mr. Mulligan. Well, it's nice to see I got such a big reception.
Ah, Brody. It's going to be a wonderful feeling you'll have standing up there, all alone on the very top of the bridge, looking down for miles and miles with nothing under you but the cool green water itself. I wonder what you'll be thinking.
I'll be thinking, Mulligan, how I'm going to win enough dough to put joints like yours out of business.
Jumping off this bridge? Take care, Brody. You don't put your own joints out of business.
Steve, you just can't do this. You'll get killed. What do you care what this bunch of hoodlums think? You just can't do such a crazy thing.
Listen, Daisy. I'm going to jump, and I'm going to jump now. Step back, you guys. You'll get drowned by the splash.
Oh, you're all murderers. That's what you are. Steve's committing suicide.
Well, he said he'd jump off the bridge if it was the last act of his life.
It probably will be.
He's crawling out on that gator.
Hey, is this bridge shaking or is it just Brody's knees?
Oh, look at him out there posing.
He's getting ready.
And there he goes!
No, Steve!
Well, if Steve was going to come up, he'd be up by now. It's starting to get dark.
Steve's been drowned. I just know it.
Hey, there's Nobby in that boat coming in.
Sure it is. And say that that's Steve with him.
Oh, Steve, are you all right?
Sure, I'm all right.
Somebody grab a hold of the boat.
I'll get it, Nobby. I'll get it.
You see, Daisy, just like I said, there's nothing to it.
Oh, Steve.
Look out, Daisy, you'll get all wet.
Oh, I don't care. Oh, Steve, you were wonderful, wasn't he, Nobby?
He sure was. We all knew you'd do it, Steve.
Hey, Steve. Listen, Steve.
What's the matter, Mulligan?
You got to beat it, Steve. Gallagher, the cop, heard you jumped off the Brooklyn Bridge.
Yeah? So what does he think of me now, Mulligan?
I tell you, Steve, you got to run for it. Gallagher thinks you're a public nuisance. He's going to arrest you for disturbing the peace.
Arrest me? Holy smoke, he can't do that. I'm a hero.
Hey, George, you read this? Fella jumped off the Brooklyn Bridge.
Oh, the poor guy was killed, eh?
No, he hit the water with another scratch.
Yes, by the time Steve Brody had succeeded in bellowing his way out of jail, all New York had heard about his celebrated jump from the Brooklyn Bridge. For the first time in the history of Steve's saloon, it is jammed to the rafters with cash customers. And Steve is the man of the hour.
Have you see, Daisy, I told you I'd put this joint over. But now there's a little matter we got to take up.
Like what, for instance?
Like when you and me are going to get hitched.
Well, and who says I'm going to marry you?
I do.
Oh, well, that's different.
And you will?
Sure I will, Steve.
Well, seeing as how we're engaged, what about a kiss?
Steve.
I beg your pardon.
Oh.
Hey, listen, brother, can't you see we're busy? What's the idea of busting in like that?
I'm very sorry. You see, my name is Charles Hoyt.
Oh, the theatrical producer?
Oh, how do you do? Welcome to Steve Brody's. Can I buy you a drink?
No, thank you. I came to see you on a matter of business. You see, I am producing a new show, A Trip to Chinatown.
Oh, I read about it in the paper, Mr. Hoyt.
And naturally, I'm lining up talent for
And you'll be wanting a singer.
Yes, indeed.
Oh. Well, Mr. Hoyt, you won't find a better voice anywhere on the Bowery than Daisy O'Toole.
Well, I'm sure of that, but...
Steve, I wouldn't leave you now,
now,
but...
Now, listen, Daisy, I ain't going to stand in your way.
I'm afraid you don't understand. You see, Mr. Brody, I'm intrigued with the amount of publicity you've received. So I figured that it would be a great idea to put you into my new show.
Me? But I...
Certainly. Why, all New York will want to see Steve Brody.
But, Mr. Hoyt, I ain't no actor.
Mr. Brody, if you could take a chance off that bridge, I can take a chance on you. Now, be at my office tomorrow morning, and we'll arrange all the details. Glad to have met you, Miss O'Toole. I'll expect you around 11, Steve. Goodbye.
Well, gee whiz.
Funny. Here we were thinking it was me.
Me, an actor. Well, what do you know?
Oh, it's crazy, Steve. You're not an actor.
Oh, I don't know. If I could make it off the bridge, I can make it on the stage. You know, I used to recite a little back in the 9th Street school. Beneath the spreading chestnut tree, the village smithy stands.
Steve, please.
Imagine me, Steve Brody, up there on the stage. I'm up there in front of the footlights. The audience is breathless. Mr. Hoyt is about to announce me. I'll be sensational.
Henri, you are the flowers for Mr. Brody's table.
Mr. Brody at the Vanderbilt Hotel. That there, the Bowery Invading Society.
Well, hello there, Henry. How's the boy?
Very well, Mr. Brody, quite well.
Give that champagne an extra twirl, Henry. It's got to be good and cold.
It will be, sir.
And keep it coming fast. I got a lot of high-class ladies and gentlemen joining me.
Yes, sir, Jim. In the third round, I uncorks a right that lands Paddy Ryan on the canvas and... Oh, Steve Brody. Well, how are you?
Hello there, John L. What's this joint coming to, letting box fighters in?
You know my pal, Diamond Jim Brady?
Yeah, sure. Hello.
Hello, Steve.
We're throwing another party, Steve? Sure, why not?
Well, Jim, you better watch out. Pretty soon Brody will be stealing your stuff, lighting cigars with $10 bills.
You should talk, Sullivan. The way you throw your dough around.
Well, with me it's different. I can lick any man in the world. And I'll never run out of challenges. But what are you going to do when you run out of bridges, eh?
Yeah, you know, I got other ways of making money. I'm entering a horse at Saratoga.
Oh, bought a horse, Brody, eh? Well, you don't care how you spend your dough, do you?
Dough's to spend, ain't it? You only live once, and brother, I'm living now. Henry, bring my pal some champagne.
I'm worried about Steve. It's been 6 months since we've seen him.
He's just busy with his swell uptown friends, spending his money like a crazy loon.
Well, you know how Steve is, Nobby. Sort of like a kid at a party, always bragging and showing off. He doesn't really mean it.
Yeah? Well, he'll be around one of these days.
Oh, Nobby, I might as well tell you. Steve moved out of that swell hotel.
How do you know?
I was there yesterday, and they acted kind of funny. Well, like you owed the money.
Well, gee, Daisy, didn't they know where he went?
No, Nobby.
Don't worry, kid. I'll look for him.
Oh, you've got to. I just know things aren't going well for him.
Say, mister, tell me something. Have you seen Steve Brody?
No, monsieur. He has not been here for weeks. Try Rectors.
The last time I saw him, he was walking back from Saratoga.
Address? All he left here was a couple of bum checks.
Hey, you. Have you seen Steve Brody?
Brody? Yeah, seen him this morning.
Huh? Well, where'd he go?
I don't know. He beat it.
Listen, I gotta find him.
Why don't you try the bridge, bud? From the looks of Brody, I think he was heading for the river.
Hello, Steve.
Hello, Nobby.
Funny me meeting you here on the bridge, ain't it, Steve?
What's funny about it? Go away, will you? I got stuff on my mind.
Yeah, well, what kind of stuff brings you out on the bridge in the middle of a foggy night? You're not planning another leap off the old bridge, are you?
Well, what if I am?
Well, if you are, you're not worth all the trouble you've caused me and Daisy.
Daisy? What's she got to do with it?
Who do you suppose has been sticking around the joint to keep it alive? But she's got everything to do with it. That's what.
Well, I'm glad to hear your joint is still operating, Nobby.
It ain't my joint, Steve. I never sign no papers when you give them to me.
Well, it's yours anyhow. I'm not the kind of a guy that turns back.
You ain't turning back, Steve. Because you ain't never been away. That wasn't you up there at the Vanderbilt. You've been down here with us all the time.
You're having a pipe dream, Nobby. Go away, will you?
Listen, Steve. I'm giving you one more chance. Are you coming with me?
Oh, who's giving who one more chance? Listen, Nobby, what makes you think you can threaten me?
I'll show you what this... Steve, I had to do it, Steve. I had to do it, boy. Speak to me. Say something to your old pal.
Why, you lousy, no good bum.
Well, Steve, there it is. Same old swinging door.
Yeah, the same old sign. Steve Brody's Saloon. Oh, it sure looks good to me.
Well, go on in. Go on in. It's still your joint.
Okay.
Well, Steve! There you, Steve! Welcome home!
Gee, well... Well, the same old gang. Clancy,
hello,
Shaughnessy.
There.
Gee, it's swell of you guys.
Hello, Steve. How are you, boy?
Well, John O. Hiya, bum.
Hello there, Steve. Did you hear the news? I've signed to meet Jake Kilrain in New Orleans, and I'll slug him out in one round.
Yeah, well, I'm laying 8-5 on Jake.
Welcome home, Steve. It's been no fun without you.
Oh, Mulligan, no competition,
hello,
huh?
Hello, Steve.
Daisy.
Welcome home, Steve. Come on, let's get away from this crowd. We can talk in the back room.
Okay, Daisy. Daisy, you look great. And you got a new dress, huh?
Mm-hmm. You like it?
Oh, I sure do. It's almost as blue as your eye.
Oh, the same old Steve. Same old Blarney.
Daisy, I've missed you so much.
I've missed you too, Steve.
I guess I sure made a dunce of myself, huh?
Oh, forget it. Say, Steve, remember that night? You know when Mr. Hoyt came in here?
Yeah, sure, I remember.
Remember, we were talking about getting hitched.
Yeah, what of it?
Well, I'm still waiting, Steve.
Oh, stop it, will you, Daisy?
Well, you mean you don't want to marry me?
It's not that,
oh, but
I...
what, Steve?
Well, why should you marry a no-good bum like me?
Why not? I'll take a chance. Steve Brody did.
Then you mean it? You really mean we should tie the knot?
Oh, you big dope. Do I have to draw a diagram?
Oh, Daisy.
Oh, gee, Steve. I'm so happy.
Honey, everything's going to be great.
Sure it is.
And I'll get back on my feet again. And I'll make money, too. Lots of it. I'll do big things. Daisy, do you know what I'm going to do?
Oh, what, Steve?
I'm going to go over Niagara Falls in a barrel.
And so the curtain falls on Act Two of The Good Old Days, starring Robert Mitchum. Our star will be back to our La Rosa microphone in just a moment. Here now is your announcer, Wendell Niles, for La Rosa.
See, taste, compare. Prove to yourself the superiority of La Rosa macaroni spaghetti egg noodles, America's largest selling brand. For real economy, remember it's a full pound. Now, once again, our host, C.P. McGregor.
Bob, I'd like to go back to one of your greatest motion picture thrills. Your part is the big Texas captain in the late Ernie Pyle story of G.I. Joe. The captain was a real person, wasn't he?
Oh, yes, he was, C.P. As a matter of fact, he was Ernie's best friend during the war. And this test of all the actors was sent to Ernie in New Mexico for him to make the choice.
And after seeing the test, Bob, what was Ernie's reaction?
Well, that was my happy moment, because he called the studio long distance and said, give the role to Mitchum.
That must have been a wonderful thrill.
Well, it certainly was, C.P. And I think no matter what I do on the screen in the future, that'll always be my proudest screen memory.
I can well understand how it would be. Well, Bob and ladies and gentlemen, I wish you a pleasant weekend, and be sure to join us on Monday for a great week of entertainment on your La Rosa Hollywood Theater of Stars. Until Monday, then, thanks for listening, and cheerio from Hollywood.
The Hollywood Theater of Stars, on Tuned to Yesterday, a syndicated recording from 1952. And the curtain comes down on this hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden years. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Livonier. Thanks for listening.